This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
In regards to your reading text, in regards to Davis Mills, I would agree. I can't remember if I said garbage time production earlier. That is inaccurate because a lot of it hasn't been garbage time. I would say softened defenses have resulted in a lot of that yardage. Somebody says, I'm not a huge Mills backer, but he has had more than one 300-yard game this year. He said two 300-yard games. Again, I get it that he has not been super effective, but no, his two 300-yard games were not mop-up yards. They were two of his more effective games. Would you call the Giants game one of his more effective games? How many points did they score in that
16.
Game?
16.
16 points. They made it to the red zone. So am I giving him a credit for almost there? I mean, if you're pointing to the Giants game as one of his more effective games, then bench his ass immediately.
Yeah, dude.
Like, if that's your best argument, right. You know, remember, honey, that time you almost climaxed? I'm a great lover. Like, no, it's almost doesn't count. You got to score points as an NFL quarterback. My God.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. You know, Lovey wouldn't shut up about the six trips to the red zone against the Giants.
Hey guys, we almost got there.
Yeah.
Almost did it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Seth, did you complete those reports on time? Almost, boss.
Almost.
I almost did it.
Yep.
I almost did it. Do I get credit for almost?
Pretty close.
Yeah.
10 pages.
I don't need these saccharine yards cited to me. About like, oh yeah, 300 yards passing, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Woo! Mm-hmm. 300 mm-hmm. yards passing. My goodness. But can't score any points. So let's see. The Giants game, he had 300 yards passing. They scored 16 points. The other game in which he had 300 yards passing was the Raiders game. They scored 20 points in that game. This is the modern NFL, everybody. It's like, if you can't score touchdowns, I don't want to hear about how that's an effective game. You couldn't score 20 points against the Raiders, and the Raiders suck. You couldn't score more than 16 points versus the Giants. That's not an effective game. He's not playing good quarterback right now.
I would say, too, there's a better chance that you could have 300-yard games that are actually bad games than 120-yard games that are good games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seth, like the 300-yard games, like you pointed out, in today's NFL don't move me as much. But if you're only throwing for 120, 135,
dude,
150 yards, like chances are your team sucked that day.
Like honestly, if we want to make this about yardage, okay, good. Here's a lollipop for your two 300-yard games. His third, so he scored. He had 319 yards against the Giants, 302 yards against the Raiders. One touchdown, one interception with the Raiders or with the Giants. Two touchdowns, one interception with the Raiders. What do you think his output was? His prolific output in his third most productive yardage-wise game was.
I don't know.
246 yards
against two.
He's taken this back to that was against the Chargers. Pathetic defense. Like, he's taking this offense back to the 1970s. 246 yards was his third highest output of the season. He only had to throw two interceptions to get those yards in that game. It's fine. Great. He's had a couple of 300-yard games. As soon as your argument is, hey, the guy's had a couple 300-yard games, you've lost the argument.
Right.
He's not a good quarterback right now. Maybe he will be someday. But he's regressing. He's getting worse and worse. Stop looking at some of these games and acting like a non-horrific effort is somehow evidence that he's doing just fine. He's a bad quarterback. Yes, other things around him are bad, but Davis Mills is really bad, and he looks dumber. Like, he looks like a stupid quarterback right now. At the very least, last year, I thought he looked like a smart rookie. He's getting dumber because he's starting to second-guess himself. His interior offensive line is pathetic. Kenyon Green is right now playing like a bust. I think Kenyon Green can be good, but I'll hold coaching. I'll blame coaching for the offensive line right now, too. They should be better than they are. I'll blame Davis Mills and coaching for Davis Mills' performance. I'll blame Lovie Smith and his overall attitude. Stop making excuses for these guys, though. They're grown men. He's not a college boy anymore. He's a bad quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Here was Lovie Smith yesterday. Sean Bajani asked him this question. We've got the question as part of the cut, I believe. It's a good question. I'll let Sean Bajani ask the question about areas where you've seen improvement, Coach.
When you take the season in totality, back at where this team was at the beginning of the season, self-evaluation, you just mentioned it, you're always kind of looking to improve something. What are some things specifically that you feel like this team does now better than they did before the season started?
I think it's pretty hard to just say we do this, that, because it's so many things you have to choose from. And from where we started, any area I think that you asked me, I think we've gotten a little bit better. But it's not just getting better, it's about getting better enough to win, and that's where we haven't made it right now. We know a lot more about our football team right now, just offensively, running the football. Have we gotten better? Yeah, I think from the first game to where we've been, again, disregarding yesterday, I think if you look at a lot of the different things on our passing game offensively, I mean, we brought the tight end into it. I think we've gotten, you know, we're throwing the ball, we're moving around an awful lot. Defensively, I think we played the run about as well as they averaged less than 4 yards yesterday. We only gave up, I think, 5 explosives yesterday, and we've been giving up a lot more. So I think the team has gotten better in a lot of different areas, just not enough.
The funny thing about that cut to me, Seth, was when he was talking about the offense, Lovie, he's like, we've gotten better at running the football. I mean, disregard yesterday. And then when he gets to the defense, he's like, you know, stopping the run, we were really good yesterday. We didn't give up a lot of explosives. Like, for offense, like, ignore yesterday. But for defense, because they – Coach, you're abjectly awful at stopping the run. Just because you slowed down Washington on Sunday doesn't mean that you've all of a sudden got a good run defense. Is there any area of this – I'll put the question to you, Seth, that Sean Bajani asked Coach Lovie Smith. Is there any area of this team where they are a markedly better football team right now than they were at the beginning of the year?
Oh, than they were at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
The pass rush might be better. And I'm basing that even just more anecdotally. I feel like and that's a game-by-game situation. And you know what it is? It's Malik Collins. I think when Malik Collins was out, it was noticeably inept in a lot of ways. I think Malik Collins being back, it just at least gives the appearance of a pass rush. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps the guys on the outside as well. So that part, I would say, is good. Yeah, Lovie Smith's style defenses, typically aren't great at stopping the run. I have a really hard time classifying any of these defensive performances as good defensive performances. Mm-hmm. When I like, you know why 150 yards rushing allowed looked like a good performance? Because they average over 180 yards allowed.
Yep.
Like, it's still really, really 150 yards allowed rushing is still worse than the second worst average runs allowed. Like, it's still a really, really bad rushing performance. Even the other teams that have bad offenses on the other side of them aren't allowing that many yards rushing. And when you're playing these games where it, like, if anything, the thing that's keeping these games somewhat close is the fact that their rushing defense is so bad. So, like, teams say, all right, we're just going to run the ball, and we'll run the ball, and we'll run the ball, and we're not going to rack up a bunch of points, but who cares?
We'll win.
And we'll play conservative on defense, too, because we're not worried about Davis Mills. And, all right, if they run for a little, congratulations, so be it. So these games end up closer, and I object to Lovie Smith's assessment of the season, where he kind of paints it as the Texans having been competitive in all these games. And I think a lot of times because they are within a score in the fourth quarter, when somebody decides that now I'm going to finish them, like, you're like a Floyd Mayweather opponent, you know? You're like when what's his name, the MMA guy, fought Floyd Mayweather.
Conor McGregor.
When Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather, it was like, all right, yeah, sure, we'll keep this close. We'll dance around for a while, but, like, I'm going to win. This is exactly what that was. It's so clearly a talent and coaching mismatch between these two teams. The teams just strategically aren't really genuinely winning until the fourth quarter because that's the strategy they've chosen to go with.
Yeah, and I think the more important thing, Seth, isn't necessarily the improvement of the team. I've said from the outset of the season that I'm not measuring this season but from the Texans on number of wins that they get. I'm measuring it on the number of players that we come out of this season feeling like they're going to be part of this thing when it gets moving in the right direction. I'm more about foundational pieces than I am wins. And I think the more important question is are there particular areas that you feel like the team has improved? Maybe the more important question is, how do you feel about where these rookies are now compared to where they were at the beginning of the year? Because as you pointed out yesterday, there were a lot of young players in training camp. We felt like there was some serious bloom on the rose, and that bloom has subsided for a lot of these guys. You know, Jalen Petrie was really good at the beginning of the year. He's had a rough go of it the last month or so. Derek Stingley's injured now. What was his big issue in college? Injuries, you know, so he's hurt now. Kenyon Green has been a disaster the last month or so. Yeah. Those are your top three picks.
And honestly, look, like with Jalen Petrie, and I can't say this enough, there is no excuse for poor tackling by a safety. Ever. Ever. Like, the name of the position is safety. You're supposed to keep the defense safe. Safe from what, Seth? From other schlubs who miss tackles. Like, you're supposed to be the guy. You're the backstop. That's what the safety does. And sometimes, you know, they come up and they use you aggressively at the line of scrimmage. I think they should hopefully continue to develop that part of Jalen Petrie. He's not allowed to be a bad tackler. And that comes back to, you know, if you're a coach, that's the number one A primary thing that you got to get Jalen Petrie doing better. And Jalen Petrie has got to take it on himself to be a good tackler. There's no such thing as, oh, he's a really good safety, he's just bad at tackling. So in my mind, until he gets the tackling straight, I don't give a damn about what else he does. But it would be nice if he caught some of these interceptions too. Because, like, let's be honest, he had some nice athletic – it was some nice athletic skill and speed to get to the interceptions in Chicago. But, like, let's not pretend that was him, you know, jumping a route or something or making some great coverage move. So, yeah, Jalen Petrie, as of right now, is not delivering on, I think, what he is capable of doing. Derek Stingley, I think by scheme – and, you know, by circumstance in the defense, he gets a pass. But I also would like to see more of him. So I think with both those guys right now, there's an element of coaching and scheme where you can say, all right, okay, these guys got to get better and I want to see more out of them. But I also am not super crazy about this scheme that they're running.
Yeah, I'm just kind of going down the list. Christian Harris, it's a little early. Damian Pierce has been awesome. As you pointed out, the workload with Damian Pierce is the concern. I liked your comp to Damian Pierce that you and I were talking about before the show, Maurice Jones-Drew. And even if Damian Pierce's career profile looks like Maurice Jones-Drew career profile, where Maurice Jones-Drew, his first 3 years in the NFL, was kind of a part-time, he split carries with Fred Taylor, and he had under 200 carries each of his first 3 years. Now, he was a beast in the red zone, but then they get him on a second contract, and then from 09, 010, and 2011, he's one of the best running backs in football. You know, he had nearly 1,400 yards in 2009, over 1,300 yards in 2010, and then in 2011, he leads the league in carries and yards, and then he fell off a cliff after that. That might be the right career arc, as you and I were talking about earlier, Seth, for Damian Pierce. You know, try to dial back the carries these first few years, and then we know he's good, so get him on a deal, make him the bell cow for a few years after that, and then whatever happens, happens. But the bell being the bell cow right now, and that's Lovey's word, not mine, in a year where you're 1-8-1 and your rookie running back is on track to get 300 some odd carries in the season, no, I'm not down with that at all.
Somebody says, just curious, how do you say hold these guys accountable because they're in the NFL, but then you say you blame the coaches? Easy. there multiple things can be wrong on a really bad football team
they
at
all
the same
stink.
Time.
Yeah.
Like, don't be the stupid sports fan who thinks there can only be one problem. Like, it's the dumbest possible thing you can be, is to be the person who's like, here's the problem with this 53-man operation. It's this one single thing. Like, I feel like I've been pretty open, like, during this entire segment talking about how I think in certain situations it's both the coaching and the players. I think in others, and sometimes it's hard to figure out exactly what it is until you remove the problem. So, okay, Pep Hamilton versus Davis Mills. At the very least, if you remove Davis Mills, you might see, oh, you know what? Pep Hamilton actually had a lot of these things operating better than we gave him credit for, because with a veteran quarterback in there, it's operating more smoothly. So you might get a better feel about Pep Hamilton. It's just impossible to say when everything remains the same that, you know, it's just Pep Hamilton or it's just Davis Mills.
All right,
I expect more from you, people.
Yep.
Don't be out there. Don't be the guy that acts like there can only be one thing wrong on a one-win football team. There tends to be more than one issue.
No doubt. After another frustrating loss to the Commanders, where do the Texans go from here? Check out the newest episode of the Hutopia Football Podcast with me and John McClain on the Odyssey app. We're doing our mailbag today. If you want to email a mailbag question, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. You can send us a question, and we record the mailbag today to drop tomorrow. But we've got our recap of the Texans' loss to the Commanders and the weekend that was in the NFL. That has dropped yesterday, so you can get it on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. I would say the anger or the concern from the fans, it's been with Davis Mills and Pep Hamilton. It's starting to land on Lovie Smith. Yesterday on the text page, Nick Caserio started getting some as well. But there's two distinct, I think, GM buckets when it comes to the fan base. We'll go through that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Lovie Smith was asked yesterday if he consults with Nick Caserio when he makes big decisions or any decisions with the team. Nick Caserio is going to join us tomorrow at 7:30 on the show here, and we'll get the state of things over at NRG Stadium from the GM's perspective. Here was Lovie Smith yesterday when he was asked about consulting with Nick Caserio.
Oh, I mean, Nick held an awful lot for our group, but we as coaches kind of take care of those things. And if there's a change going on, player-wise, our process, I'm going to talk to the position coach, I'm going to talk to the coordinator, and normally the three of us will. If there's any major decisions that are being made, done, we'll let everybody, of course, Nick and everybody else will know, of course. Cal and everybody else will know exactly what we're doing. We're communicating constantly with what we're doing with our football team.
You've got to let your coaching staff do their job on a day-to-day basis. I don't know what the line is for a 1-8-1 team, the types of decisions where you involve the GM, you know, on a week-to-week basis, mm-hmm. As far as the roster goes. I do know that quarterback is above that line.
I wonder, though, too. Like, I think when Lovie Smith agreed to take this job, I think he knew at least partially what he was stepping into,
yeah,
in terms of the prospects of the team and the roster. And Lovie is a lot different than David Culley. You know, I think David Culley saw that. I think David Culley probably agreed to a lot of concessions and a setup that other coaches might not have agreed to. With Lovie, I've always gotten the sense that he knew exactly, you know, what the pitfalls might be, and that there are certain things he was going to be in control of. So, I mean, if it comes down to a GM versus coach situation, then somebody might bend or break. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if the general setup really is, okay, Nick's going to give you the roster, but Lovey's going to make the decisions on personnel, including quarterback.
Including quarterback, you think?
Yeah, I think that discussion was probably had before Lovey accepted the job.
Okay.
I'm putting myself in Lovey's shoes, and I feel like Lovey, look, he's been a head coach forever. I don't think the financial, it wasn't like, I don't think he was desperate to take this job. And I think he knew he got into it knowing that there were going to be issues that he wanted to stay out in front of. And if there's one thing that coaches learn along the way, it's that they just want to be sure that if they want to be sure that if they're going to get screwed over, that at least it's of their own doing.
Yeah. Yep.
And I've gotten the feel that Lovey has a lot of say, like a lot more say in these matters than perhaps David Culley did.
Yeah, I believe. If you're asking me if Lovie Smith has more control than David Culley does, without question, that's the case. I believe. The quarterback one is an interesting one, just because not only the evaluation of Davis Mills that's taken place throughout the season, but now what a change at quarterback does to impact your ability to win or not win games the rest of the year.
Yeah, you know? And I do think, there are a lot of teams that don't have a formal setup where the GM has final say or the head coach has final say, and people are always incredulous and or skeptical of that. But, I mean, the teams where it works out well, you don't hear a whole lot about it because it generally works out well. But it's a small enough organization that you don't necessarily have to have that written into the Constitution, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Here, if I'm Nick Caserio, let's say I have an opinion that differs from Lovie Smith and how this should be handled. I think what I would do, or at least what I would suggest, is if you keep the long game in mind, there's a chance he might have to be hiring a new head coach this next offseason. And you don't – that's one less thing you have to explain, is if somehow, you told Lovie Smith which quarterback to play.
Yeah.
Or that you were pulling those strings. You might want to just – you want to make this as nice a landing spot for another coach as possible. And ultimately, what's the downside? Oh, no, we don't Nick Caserio wants Davis Mills to play, hypothetically,
mm-hmm.
and Lovie Smith doesn't. Okay, well, Nick Caserio doesn't get to find out that Davis Mills is not an effective quarterback.
Right.
Oh, no. Versus it's –
like, we don't know that already, yeah.
I think this is better – I don't think this is what Nick Caserio needs to make into a federal case.
Yep.
Is a fight over quarterback of this team right now.
That makes sense. I think we're putting a pecking order together, or a food chain, if you will, of the people that Texan fans have the most emotional investment in, good or bad. If we're going, if we'll start at the player and work our way up. Davis Mills, I think the approval rating is very, very low on Davis Mills. Pep Hamilton, I think that the approval rating is very, very low on Pep Hamilton. Lovie Smith, I think the approval rating is dwindling for Lovie Smith. I think probably it was a little longer to land on his lawn, but 1-8-1 with very little sign of improvement. It's Lovie is catching some heat now, and Landry put up a poll yesterday. Do you want Lovie Smith back next year? And like 90% of the people say, no, we want a new coach. So you go up one more, and it's Nick Caserio. And I think some of this is landing on Nick Casario's lawn now. My sense, Seth, from social media, text page, talking to people around town about the Texans, is that there are two distinct buckets for Nick Caserio. And it's interesting because there's a pro and there's a con. The pro is the people who are like, no, man, let's get these high picks and then let Nick eat and go do his thing. For example, 8781 on the Trailer Wheel and Frame text page. Thank you. Personally, I'm excited after this game this weekend. Hopefully it only gets worse. The entire coaching staff is fired. Nick kicks ass in the draft. We hire a real coaching staff and get back on track to greatness. Never looking back. Go Texans. 3333 says, let's be clear. Bill O'Brien messed up our books, our personnel, our credibility. He dropped the franchise off at the corner store with enough money for Doritos, Ding Dongs, and a small Coke. Now we expect the coaches and GM to make a gourmet meal with those ingredients. Step it up, fellas. You know Pep and Lovey can't call advanced schemes with this personnel. So those are the ones that are giving Nick a pass or are in favor of Nick Caserio. We're getting a few more of the ones, though, like 4-4-1-2. Time for Nick to be shown the door. His building skills have not been good. 6-5-1-6. This is all on Nick Caserio. 9-5-0-6. Do you trust Nick to draft well? Those kind of things. So,
yeah. If we look at guys taken in just the top three rounds over the last 2 years? Because it's hard. I mean, every GM whiffs a bunch. You know, the vast majority of NFL draft picks by good GMs don't end up being good picks if you look at all seven rounds. But in the top three rounds right now, what would we be saying about these guys if perhaps there were a different quarterback or just a couple more skill position players on the team that had been that were still here when Nick Caserio got here? Derek Stingley, I'll just read them all off. Derek Stingley, Kenyon Green, Jalen Petrie, John Mechie, Christian Harris, Davis Mills, and Nico Collins.
Okay.
I would say half of those guys I'm pleased with so far.
Mm-hmm.
The only guys that I'm out on as far as like me not thinking that they're going to be good players in the NFL is really, I mean, Davis Mills is the only one I look at and I say like, all right, I don't think he's got it. He might develop into something, but it's going to take some time and I'm not going to like pass up opportunities for him right now. So the guy that I feel most pessimistic about is Davis Mills, who's a third round quarterback.
Right.
Like the objection with Davis Mills going in the third round was more one of like, okay, why are you bothering wasting your time on this guy? More than it was like, okay, taking Davis Mills in the third round is something, that's the type of move that a lot of other teams do all the time. And expecting that it probably won't work out. Derek Stingley Jr., I'm waiting and going to see scheme, better defense, all of that. Kenyon Green, I've been through it with Dwayne Brown. I've been through it with Kareem Jackson. I've been through it with other first-rounders that just took a little while to develop. So I'm going to wait on Kenyon Green. I've seen some really good plays at times. I've just seen some really bad plays, too. Jalen Petrie, again, all he's got to do is learn how to tackle, and I think I'm going to be really
He'll be really good, yeah.
John Mechie, I'm not going to blame him for him getting cancer. Okay.
Right.
So that's, sorry guys, not going to do it. Christian Harris, these last two games has really started to come along. I think Christian Harris, after not having much of a training camp at all, these last two games has really started to show signs of it clicking for him and the light turning on as a linebacker. So I feel good with that. Damian Pierce wasn't a top three rounder, but let's just throw him in there for the hell of it because it's good. And then Nico Collins. Nico Collins, I think, look, as a third rounder, I think Nico Collins could very easily fit in on a receiving core on lots of good football teams.
Absolutely.
He's not going to be your A1, or in a lot of teams, he's not going to be your second best guy, but he can be part of a receiving core on a good team. So, like, so far, for a team that's had a whole bunch of – it's been a lot harder to hit the reset button on this team for multiple reasons than it typically is. I'm okay so far with his draft history. I'm not blaming Nick right now for the current state of the team, other than some of the mistakes that I think lots of GMs would have made or have made. It's just like every GM makes mistakes. It'd be like getting up and criticizing Jose Altuve for various strikeouts, you know, like the best GMs who have ever lived have a ton of mistakes out there. It takes at least a few years to figure out exactly what they are.
I can't wait to see what his approach to free agency is going to be with cap space to use, you know, cap space to use and giving it out to players that are not nearly as irresponsible. The deals that Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby were giving out, you know, there aren't just these boat anchors that are killing you.
I wonder if you look at the Jets and look what they've been able to do with free agency and draft picks, a boatload of draft picks, they've turned into a much better team this year, minus the quarterback, than I think you would have predicted or expected. And I guess that's the question, is just, all right, so if you make this team into a better team, what do you do about the quarterback situation?
Yep.
I mean, if you can have more of a turnaround this year than probably any of us feel like you could actually have, what do you – is it Garoppolo, Derek Carr – all these various other names are going to be floated out this year as bridge quarterbacks plus. Like, how do you feel about those guys?
Yeah, I not great. Like,
or they draft Bryce Young.
Yeah, Bryce Young would inject some energy into the whole thing.
In my mind, I was kind of thinking like, okay, what if they end up being like the fourth or fifth overall
selection?
And then what do you do then? I think it's a slam dunk if you've got a top two pick.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Again, Nick Caserio joins us tomorrow at 7:30 on the show. We'll ask him about a lot of this stuff we've been talking about today. Lovie Smith was asked what I thought was a really silly question to ask during a press conference yesterday, But I think it's a great question to ask Payne and Pendergast. We'll get to that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. Lovie Smith was asked a question yesterday. He's in the middle of getting grilled about his quarterback and the season so far. Where have you improved? What kind of challenge do the Dolphins provide for you? And then out of nowhere, he gets asked this.
Thanksgiving, what are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for? I mean, there's so many things. You know, when you're a 64-year-old guy that's been just kind of hanging around as long as I have with a family that you love, that's been blessed beyond your wildest imagination, what I get a chance to do for a living. There are so many things. I think one thing to be thankful for, to just be here to be thankful for something. And so that's what it is. Thanksgiving is a special time, special week. Just looking forward to making it to that Thanksgiving and enjoying another day.
Well, what sort of stress on is it? Waddle and Hill? What do they put on their defense on second?
So much for that Thanksgiving and all the good things that we were thinking about coming up.
That was funny.
That was, by the way, the overall tone of the press conference yesterday was one in which we used to see this with Bill O'Brien, too, who was like, wired a lot differently than Lovie Smith, but still, coaches come in and they realize, like, we got testy yesterday. What are you going to do about it? And, sorry, you know, Lovie kind of alluded to it without saying anything specific, but I think, like I told you yesterday, it feels like we're midway through an episode of Naked and Afraid.
Yeah.
Where things get testy. Everybody's nerves are bare, and, like, Lovie Smith got to that point on Sunday. It wasn't like it was like overly aggressive questioning or anything by Brian T. Smith, I don't think. Mm-mm. And it wasn't even necessarily – like by Bill O'Brien standards, it was not a testy press conference. But it was just kind of testy and everybody forgot about it. Now we're getting questions about Thanksgiving.
Like getting asked about Thanksgiving in the middle of a press conference about the Miami Dolphins and your prickly – press conference the day before felt like a bit of a softball in between.
Well, yeah, but I'll give credit to that was not like a Texan staffer that asked that question. It wasn't somebody planted in there, but like, hey, Lovie, could you point out to the positives that I handed to you in memo form before the press conference?
No, but read the room, man. Come on. Yeah, now it's an appropriate question for me and you, Seth, because
But that guy asked the question. Might be right. He's writing a story. You got to remember, these are writers that are writing stories, so he's probably writing a story.
I know why. I'm sure he's got a reason for it. It just felt a little out of place. That's all. But I think
negative Nelly.
I think. Well, I'm about to say all the reasons. Negative. I'm about to give you some reasons why I'm thankful for the 1-8-1 Houston Texans.
Thankful for the Texans, not just life in general.
Not just life in general. Thankful. Okay. You think it'd be hard to find reasons to be thankful for a 1-8-1 team? But I am thankful for this team. In many ways. How about Brandon Cook's drama at the trade deadline? I'm very thankful for that.
I mean, at the end of the day, how Nick sees fit on what he wants his culture to be, that's a question for him, you know, because I don't know. I don't know what that looks like, and I'm just going to, you know, be the best I can be for my teammates for the time being, and everything else, I'll let take care of itself.
You know what the culture looks like from his eyes?
You know, you're going to have to ask him about that.
The worst part of that was, like, he was saying he doesn't know what he wants the culture to be. So not even, like, being asked to describe what the current culture is, but what does Nick Caserio want the culture to be? And to act like you don't have any idea about that? Man, that's, I'll tell you what, that was some next level sniping, because it's not outright aggressive. It's, but it's lethal passive aggressive.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I feel myself and others were able to this last week kind of start looking at Brandon Cooks as, hey, it is what it is. And man, hopefully he plays really well so the Texans can get something out of it. I don't have enough room or time in the day to be overly angry with Brandon Cooks and his mini sit out that he had. I'm over it by now, so I'm thankful that I and many others are at least over it, and we're just being pragmatic about it.
I'm thankful for Lovie Smith's prickly side that he showed on Sunday.
Lovie, you mentioned the fans deserve better. I mean, I look out of the stands; they're mostly empty. You guys were booed multiple times. This has been happening all year.
Let me stop you. It hadn't been happening all year. You can say. Well, I'm talking about the fans booing us. All right.
You guys have been booed.
Yeah, we've been booed. Yes, and every time something is bad, fans are going to boo, and they have a right to do that. What is your question?
I was going to ask my question.
What is it?
How does this get better? How do you improve this?
By putting a better product on the football field.
Why didn't that happen today?
Because I didn't think I should do it today.
Why were you guys not better today?
I'm not going to tell you that.
I am thankful for that side of Lovie Smith, which we didn't get to really see for at all this season or the 2 years that he's been here. So I'm thankful for that. Seth, I'm thankful for draft day anticipation. I'm right now first and seventh picks in the draft. Very thankful. 1-8-1 Texans. Thank you for that.
I think I'm doubly thankful that there are multiple good defensive linemen available out of Georgia specifically. Because I love me some Georgia defensive linemen. Jordan Davis, you know I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
And he's, when healthy, been a big factor in Philadelphia's defense. They're missing him now. So, yeah, I think aside from the quarterback, I'm just wired this way because I've watched the NFL draft and NFL for too long to get super excited about a quarterback taking number one or number two overall. I've lived through this, man. I've been on a team with a number one overall quarterback. I'm just going to bide my time on that. With position players, it's nice because you get to really see it more immediately.
Yeah.
You know, cause Sean, that's the other problem with quarterbacks. Even if he comes out and he's a rookie of the year as a quarterback, sometimes he's still not a good quarterback. So give me a pass rusher that can come in and actually make an impact in his rookie year. I'm like, oh, okay. If this guy just steers clear of the booger sugar, then we're good to go. Let's go.
A lot of guys out there still on the booger sugar?
Not anymore. It used to be a thing in the 80s.
I know. That's great. I am thankful for the existence of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Second and 5 from the 22. Pierce again. Over the middle, 20, breaks a tackle, 15, 10, gang tackle inside the 5. Does he stay on his feet? He does, down to the 2-yard line. What a run by Damian Pierce.
That's right.
Got out of trouble again and again until Cisco brings him down.
Texans have won 9 games since the beginning of 2020. 5 of them have been against the Jacksonville Jaguars. We would not know what that winning feeling feels like for the most part had it not been for the existence of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that leads me, Seth, to the final thing I am thankful for. And you heard him in that highlight. I am thankful, 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 capital T-H-A-N-K-F-U-L, for one Damian Pierce.
Yo, H-Town. Hey, it's your boy DP. Hey, he's the newest running back. We coming to H-Town. Hey, I'm here for a good time and a long time. You feel me? Hey, let's go, babe. I'm ready to work. Appreciate everybody. Let's get their work in, man. Let's go.
I love him so much.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the best. He needs to be protected.
Yes.
They need to start playing Eno Benjamin and Ogunbowale or whomever else to give them some more snaps. I think it could be good for the team, especially with Eno Benjamin, because he's a different type of running back, and especially his potential explosiveness as a receiver. All of this, I don't care if it helps him win more football games, but I just want Damian Pierce to get his 15 carries, say, per game. You know, nice, and get to learn the game, get better at the game, have some success. But ultimately, you and I were looking at Maurice Jones-Drew career, and Maurice Jones-Drew years 4, 5, and 6 is when he was plunking out 15 touchdowns a year, 1,000-plus yards and everything. So get Damian Pierce cruising on in to year 3 or 4. Give him a nice a contract extension right then, and then have a nice little career there. That's all we need.
That's what
just
we need.
Don't run him into the ground this year.
Larry in Stafford is here. I'm sure here to tell us what he's thankful about with the 1-8-1 Texans. Hello, Larry.
Hello, Sean. I'm very thankful they ass ain't playing on Thanksgiving when I'm trying to eat some turkey and watch a turkey play football. No, and I'm also thankful they're out of town on Sunday in Miami so that we can still be able to go out and enjoy the nice weekend or whatever and sit at home and watch the game on Sunday. Look, sometimes I feel like I have to do this public service announcement for people that tune in and they hear my voice because they get real irritated and then they start to attack me and saying I'm not a Texan fan and all this other stuff. just because I express my disdain for stuff that just everybody should be aware of. So, Seth, this morning you was talking about some guy texted in and the Trailer Wheel and Fortune text page and said, you know, Davis Mills has 200-300-yard passing games. And I put those dudes in the same people that boil wieners for hot dogs instead of grilling them. Or I'll put them in the same group with the guys that was trying to convince us, well, Davis Mills had 5 games last year, and that's going to make him a reason why we should continue to watch him. Look, 300-yard passing games don't mean a damn thing in the National Football League right now if your ass is 1-8-1. Davis Mills is not a good quarterback. I don't know why people don't understand that. You have eyes to watch games. You see what he sees. He's not seeing the game the way that NFL quarterbacks in today should be playing football. And the thing about it is these same people try to make you think that you're only talking about one thing. We're talking about Davis Mills because he plays the most important position in football. But there's a plethora of things that are going on over there on Kirby that needs to be fixed. And I'm here to tell you that if they can get somebody in there that can really start teaching these guys how to tackle and start teaching all these guys on the offensive line how not to make dumb penalties at the wrong time, they can fix some of these problems. But here's the thing, son, you have been saying it. What we don't want to see is these young dudes come out of this season with their heads hung low and look on into next season with a lack of confidence. I'm okay with Kenyon Green experiencing what he's experiencing right now because that's going to be something he's going to be able to pull from later as he gets better to say, you know what, I went through this and now I'm here. All he has to do is get stronger. All he has to do is clean up his technique, and that's on Warhop and those guys over there to keep filling this guy up. Petrie's going to be fine. He's been a dog since he was 8 years old. He's going to be fine. The Texans' issues are going to continue to be the same until they get that number one spot filled out. And you're right. It's starting to fall on Nick Ass because now you get the opportunity to pick a third coach. Y'all find me some precedents in the NFL that a GM has done that in a while.
All right, thanks, Larry. Appreciate the phone call. Turns out Larry was not thankful for a whole lot of things with the 1-8-1 Texans. I misread that. All right.
Yeah. The by the way, as far as the Thanksgiving game slate, it's actually a really good slate this year.
It is.
Like after it, because usually there's a bunch of duds because it's the Lions and but it's Giants, Cowboys, Bills, Lions. This year the Lions have been intriguing. If they went three in a row,
they're frisky. Yes.
Yeah, and Patriots, Vikings.
It's a nice one.
Some good juice here on these.
Yeah. I like it. Good day to just camp out on the couch, Larry. We appreciate the phone call. All right. 9 o'clock hour coming up here. Patty Smith's going to jump in with us for a few minutes. Some big announcements and big doings with the Houston Sports Awards coming up. So Patty Smith, of course, of the Harris County Houston Sports Authority, going to jump in with us for a few minutes. And what do the odds board say about the next quarterback to be benched? Because right now it appears to be a two-man race. We will get to that next as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.